An update on the great Kyren Lacy. He released a statement regarding the accident that happened in December. We'll get to that in just a second, but it is rare that we lead off with men's basketball, as there are quite a few of you frustrated with the direction of the program. There's nothing to really dislike about Matt McMahon. You know, he's an interesting guy. He's an affable guy, but he came to LSU at the absolute wrong time, because in the SEC right now, it is a murderer's row of coaches, and it is so freaking hard to win in this conference. And this weekend, when Texas, on a down year, the Longhorns do have some recent good history in basketball, what happens? Well, they come to the PMAC and blow us out. And this honestly has happened a little too much during the Matt McMahon era. And look, in the SEC this year, arguably the best coach, the most accomplished coach in the conference, is doing a terrible job at Arkansas. Now, he won a big game, obviously, this weekend in John Calipari. But it is so hard to win in the SEC right now. Whether you're looking at a guy like Dennis Gates, who's really talented, all the way up to really accomplished coaches like Rick Barnes, who has a freaking powerhouse this year. It is so, so, so hard to win. And you can make a very strong case that the overall coaching talent in SEC basketball is just as good, if not harder, than it is in SEC football. So, you know, I say all of that, but there will more than likely be a change with the LSU men's basketball team going into next season. And it was unacceptable what happened versus Texas, okay? So it's hard to take that in. Obviously, there was so much excitement because of Matt McMahon's connection to John Morant, who is an inspiration. Obviously, you can go listen to our Mikayla Williams interview for LSU women's basketball. She wears number 12 for John Morant. Obviously, that story was really cool. But you go back to asking the question, well, which college basketball coach at the non-Power 4 level would have not won with Ja Morant as your star player? Rarely do you see a superstar player coming from that level. So, once again, I am still going to cheer for LSU basketball. I'm still going to cheer for Matt McMahon and all the talented assistants he has on his staff. But it's really, really hard to watch them. And it would be one thing if this was the first year, but we are well into this era. And what happens with his coach teams is they go on such unfreaking believably long stretches of time where they don't score or where they're getting run out of the building, where it's a lot to a little. And you can't do that. Like, it's almost every single game. And what's crazy is there's been so many games where LSU basketball is getting blown out and then they come back to make it a margin within 4 or 5 points at the end, and you still lose. So it's tough, but that is where we are with him. Now, the next big story is Kyren Lacy did release a statement, and we will give it a look because he had a lot of people coming after him for this accident that he allegedly was involved in. Okay. So there, for those that don't know, in mid-December, there was a deadly crash in Kyren Lacy. What we do know was near it. Okay. And it involved the death of 78-year-old Herman Hall. Okay. This is the statement from Kyren Lacy's defense attorney. He said the collision that resulted in the death of Mr. Herman was not caused by Kyren Lacy's actions. The accident occurred directly in front of him when a second vehicle in the oncoming lane crossed the center line and collided with Mr. Herman's vehicle, where he was the passenger. We are aware of the information and belief that the vehicle that collided with Mr. Herman's vehicle was issued a citation. At no time did Kyren Lacy's vehicle strike the rear end of Mr. Herman's vehicle, nor did any of the vehicles Mr. Lacy passed collided with his. After the collision occurred in front of Mr. Lacy, he cautiously went around the vehicles after the passage was safe. All right. They emphasize, it is crucial to emphasize that Kyren Lacy did not cause or contribute to the crash. There was no suspicion of alcohol or drug use involved. Furthermore, contrary to some media reports, Mr. Lacy never returned to the scene of the accident. Okay. So Mr. Lacy's actions following the incident included sharing graduation pictures, engaging in training. It was never intended to minimize the tragedy that occurred. Okay. And Kyren also says he does not believe he's at fault for the accident, and so on and so on. Okay. Mr. Lacy turned himself in. He was later released after posting a bail amount of $151,000. And if he is truly innocent, I hope he gets every penny of that return. Okay. As many of you know, I'm a Kyren Lacy fan. I own a few of his one-of-one trading cards. I really loved watching him play. I loved watching him, come from a player who was the single most popular player on the team because of all the drops. And I felt, everybody criticized him for it. But for him to go from there to becoming a big member of one of the best college football offenses ever, to having a really good season this year and have all of this happen, if he is indeed innocent, I hope he gets a clean run towards the NFL draft. Now, there is a lot of catching up to do when it comes to his NFL draft stock because this is a loaded wide receiver draft class. Why? Because every single wide receiver draft class is loaded. There is never a shortage of great wide receivers in the NFL draft, and this last season was no different. So, I wish Kyren nothing but the best. Some of Kyren's inner circle does watch this channel, and I hope he bounces back from this and we get to a resolution in all of this. Now, once again, that was his statement. We don't know all the details regarding this. There's not been an independent investigative report done on this by anybody in the media just yet, and we'll see what happens next. The truth, though, is regarding LSU football, you must, and this is very key, tell every single person that is a member of the LSU football team to be careful when they drive. Because obviously, we still don't know all the details of what happened with Colin Hurley and his accident. And look, we know of other programs in the SEC, wink, wink, nod, nod, Georgia, that is known for speeding violations. Speeding is a major problem in our country. Speeding in particular in the South, there are more, I believe, I'd have to go back and look at this data again, car accidents that result in fatalities in the South than other areas. So in the South, we love to speed. We love vehicles. Every single one of us have been involved or know someone that's been involved in an accident that results in big time injuries or fatalities. So I would just, if I'm Brian Kelly, reemphasize to the team, slow down. And every single time you're in a vehicle, be careful. But in Kyren's case, it's important to remain steadfast and more importantly, open as new information creeps in. Okay? So, this is very critical. I wanted to talk tonight about Aaron Anderson. Now that Kyren Lacy is gone, Aaron Anderson is going to step into an even bigger role next season, right? Well, it's not necessarily Aaron Anderson, or should I say Kyren Lacy leaving, that should increase Aaron Anderson's target share. It's that Kyren Lacy and Mason Taylor are leaving. Mason Taylor was arguably the best tight end in LSU history. And more importantly, as far as this passing attack is concerned, he was a big intermediate option for what we did. And for everyone that actually knows Garrett Nussmeier, he is better in the intermediate than he is in the deep passing game. So that means Aaron Anderson's job is going to be even more important. All right. And even to take it one step further, we'll do a film study soon. I've been working on it, taking a look at every single snap that Aaron Anderson has played up to this point. And even going back to his somewhat disappointing 2023 season, you look back at the Arkansas game, he had a huge third down conversion in the first half of that game, and it was in this short intermediate middle. You can make a very strong case that he's one of the best short intermediate middle wide receivers we have ever seen at LSU. But there are some areas to his game, such as the acrobatic, difficult 50-50 catch that he needs to get better at. So I'm really excited about Aaron Anderson. And what I need you to do in the comment section below, let me know your thoughts on Aaron Anderson. Let me know what you guys think in the chat on AA. Now, before we get to all your comments, this is something that I want to also announce as far as the future of this channel is concerned. Okay. There was a huge, and I mean huge, recruiting weekend that happened this past weekend at LSU. All right. And I would be better off looking at YouTube analytics with putting the recruiting weekend as the thumbnail image. All right. And leading with that. And there will be streams I still do that. All right. But the simple truth is, by talking with some of our patrons privately and also just looking at the current landscape of college football, with the highest bidder at the day of signing day mentality that we have in all of college football, I am going to be a lot more cautious about what I say about recruiting trips. Okay. Obviously, it was cool seeing someone like Richard Anderson, a top 50 national defensive tackle, talk a lot about his time at LSU. And he's also already committed. We already have most of the great 2026 elite five-star top 50, top 100 recruits already committed to LSU. And then, of course, Lamar Brown, right in our own backyard, is a five-star offensive lineman who many feel is the best player in the whole class. You've heard him have really good comments, and he's obviously not committed yet. But I am going to be very cautious about this, because I go back, and I don't think I would say cringe, because we spent a lot of time. We even interviewed the young man. We spent so much time talking about Bryce Underwood just for our hearts to get ripped out at the last second. And I know that's normal recruiting, but now it is so public that it's about being the highest bidder for the top guys oftentimes. So one recruiting story that I do want to share, though, is that On3 did give Carius Kern his fifth star in their personal recruiting rankings. And it is interesting, because every single cycle, there is an offensive lineman that commits or signs to LSU that gets a very late push from On3 in particular. So Lance Hurd was one. Last year, Weston Davis had a lot of late steam from the On3 recruiting evaluators. And then, of course, you have Carius Kern, who I think is going to be really good. So as far as that is concerned, I am really excited about that. Now, I want to say thanks to everyone. Please like, subscribe, ring the bell. D-Pain, what's good? Joshua, Tony, S. Young. Philip, do you think Matt McMahon will be fired at the end of the year? I do. Is not having the talent in basketball during the NIL era a good excuse? Yeah, in the NIL era, Pegasus, there's going to be so many people that want immediate results now. All right. That's just how it works. But one thing I found to be very interesting is what's happening at Ohio State. And once again, there's only one national champion every single year. Only one, as many of you know. But on top of that, there's all this transition with college athletics, with coaching, and, of course, players going from school to school. It is interesting, though, a school like Ohio State loses both their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator after winning the Natty. And people are freaking out about it. This is not too uncommon. Okay? Steve Sarkisian wins the Natty, gets a Texas head coaching job. We win the Natty, we lost both Dave Aranda and Joe Brady. This is common. Especially when Chip Kelly went from being a head coach, both at the NFL and collegiate level, to being an offensive coordinator, winning the Natty in college football, which he didn't do at Oregon. And now he takes an NFL job with, you know, a former Pac-12 foe in obviously Pete Carroll. And now he's with the Raiders. And then Jim Knowles being offered $3 million a year is going to age really badly. That to me. And you can all takes expose me until the end of time. That is going to end up being one of the more disastrous decisions in college football recent memory. Okay? It's Jim Knowles, a defensive coordinator with a coach who constantly comes up short in big games. Are you really going to offer and pay someone $3.1 million a year to coach defense? A complex scheme that many people smarter than me, and I'm a film study analyst, many people smarter than me believe is a complex scheme that doesn't oftentimes result in immediate success. Okay. Let's go to Sibley. No excuses for basketball. Coach Mack can't judge player quality, but you can't judge a coach until he has good players. He is not a fluid coach. With NIL revenue, would you put the money on LSU football and baseball and let basketball struggle? This is a very good question from Sibley because, I speak frequently to two different NIL people. One that oversees NIL and another who works in that industry. All right. In fact, one of my buddies bought, let's say the Arkansas Razorback. So I want to shout him out. He watches the show from now again. My buddy Jake, my father-in-law passed. He is a big Arkansas Razorback fan. My father-in-law, and he also loved barbecue. There's a barbecue place called Wright's where you could buy, this barbecue package. They send it to you, and they send the money to Arkansas Razorback Athletics. And it's crazy, right? And, if there's a barbecue joint in Baton Rouge, I would love to partner with you and help you raise more money for our NIL as well. But that's just a genius way of doing it. And, with all these different ways people are doing NIL, whether it's Bayou Traditions or whatever, one thing that is brought up, where is the transparency with the money that you're giving? The funny thing is when you do these donations, you could specify where you want the money to go. So that's where it gets interesting. But the way I understand it, and Sibley, I know you understand it. I know you understand it well at two different universities. Okay. When you are dealing with such big money being passed around, you must be cognizant that when you're donating to LSU's NIL, that LSU is an all-encompassing brand. There's LSU gymnastics, LSU softball, LSU baseball. So it's not just LSU football. So yeah, you could specify where you want your money to go. And if you are a big corporation, you're donating seven or eight figures to a sport, you're likely going to have some knowledge of where that money is going. But if it's just an anonymous donation, sure, you could put more effort into one school compared to the other. And the funny thing about this, Sibley, is we have so much money invested in our non-big revenue generating sports. All right. So, you know, there was an Ole Miss reporter who just released their financials, and he was able to uncover that their women's basketball program is losing $5 million a year. And that's not uncommon. I've seen the numbers for LSU. And, you know, with Kim Mulkey, obviously we're doing more, but we also invested more money after winning the Natty. We had a lot of assistants get raises. Kim Mulkey, you know, draws in a pretty penny, and rightfully so, because she's really damn good. But, you know, it's crazy how much more revenue, profit, all that stuff that football makes and will continue to make compared to the other sports. So what's the future of those other sports? Right now, I'm a little shocked at how good it's all coming along. I just am. I'm a little shocked at how good the other sports are doing. All right. Even though there is some concern from the powers that be that you start seeing sports like tennis and sand volleyball get cut. Okay. Now, coming up, how a Big Ten coach could be changing the LSU spring game in a major, major, major way. But first,
let's go
on a journey together with Zion Imaging. I want you to see this experience up close. And me, as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun. And I gotta show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience, serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. All right. Via the Nebraska Cornhuskers, Matt Rhule made a fuss. Nebraska might cancel its spring game due to tampering concerns. Colleges want pro sports-like employment restraints without the employment part. And where it gets very messy is with things like tampering. Okay? Let's hear from Matt Rhule, the man himself, regarding his logic. And let me know if you guys agree with what he has to say.
I don't know that yet, but I'll be honest with you, I highly doubt it. And I think it's really fundamentally, I hate to say it like this, it's really because, you know, last year we were one of the more televised spring games, and I dealt with a lot of people offering our players a lot of opportunities after that. So to go out and bring in a bunch of new players and then showcase them for all the other schools to watch, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The word tampering doesn't exist anymore. It's just absolute free, open, common market. And so I don't necessarily want to open up to the outside world. I don't want these guys all being able to watch our guys and say, wow, he looks like a pretty good player. Let's go get him. So, but I don't know yet. You know, I don't know anything. I just I thought it was important that, you know, we at least started to broach that subject of it not being televised. Yet at the same time, I do want to show off our players in some way. So what exactly it'll be yet. I have not worried about anything other than recruiting right now, you know, both the portal and into the 26 class.
Spring games. Does this affect Brian Kelly in our spring game on April 12th? Does this affect spring games in general? Now, I have said repeatedly that an inter-squad scrimmage does not make sense for a spring game. I do not like the current iteration of the spring game, and I feel you should play another opponent. But if you're out there and you think tampering and poaching and all those things can happen, then I understand Matt Rhule. I really, really, really do understand it. One game can reset your market. One game. I've seen it happen at other schools. I saw it happen with Arkansas. I saw it happen with Tennessee. I've seen it elsewhere. One game of decent film footage can get you a really good role with another team or just another role elsewhere with roster guarantees, snap guarantees, and so on and so on and so on. So type Y for yes, type N for no. You would be okay with a spring game going away. What I think could happen is the same thing that happens at the NFL Pro Bowl today. And we had quite a few players playing in it. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, so on and so on and so on. Patrick Queen. I like the spring game. I like the fact that there is some version of football that is played during the spring. But for me, I understand Matt Rhule's concern. I really, really, really do. Do I think coaches can be a little overzealous about teams taking their plays and you know, there being too much access and so on? Sure. But if you can withhold as much information you possibly can, all the power to you. Just make your playbook very vanilla. As they normally are during spring games. Just play cover one, play cover three, mix in some cover two, and run all verts on every play. Every single play. Don't make any exceptions. Matt says, I don't have anything against women's sports. He just wants all the money to be spent on men's basketball, football, and baseball. So this is why that's a flawed line of thinking, Matt. The first thing is there is so much brand equity in being big in women's sports at the collegiate level compared to men's sports at the collegiate level. Now, why is that? Well, women's college sports are bigger than women's professional sports. It's just how it is. Outside of gymnastics at the Olympics, which is once every 4 years, women's gymnastics is a big deal. In particular, to women. Now, is it a very niche thing? Yes. But my 99-year-old grandmother in New Roads, Louisiana, turns on gymnastics every Friday night. It is a thing for her. She's got to have it. All right. So recently, as you guys know, I have a lot of family. I say family. I have a lot of friends that live in Arkansas. LSU played a gym meet in Arkansas. And I had some friends take their little girls. And instead of taking photos with the Arkansas gymnastics girls, which they did, they waited in long lines to take photos with Livy Dunn after the meet, wearing Arkansas gear. Do you know how much money Livy Dunn has probably made at LSU? A lot. You may not think so. Okay. So I'm not just saying that to be equality or whatever, but there is a lot of value in Kim Mulkey and all of that. And it's not just about men's collegiate sports. And I'm not getting paid to say that. I'm not trying to. It's just the truth. Okay. And then if you were to say, all right, and a lot of people have Matt's opinion. Hey, I just want to use all the money and put it towards football, baseball, and basketball, the sports that most people do indeed care about. Well, let's just say a good chunk of my viewers are just football viewers, all right? Like I said at the beginning, when I put Matt McMahon on the thumbnail, people get confused because I am an LSU football channel, all right? But I like to do videos on Kim Mulkey. We did a postgame on LSU versus South Carolina. I love Michaela Williams and Flage and Anissa the Beast Morrow. I love that team. I do. But a good chunk of my viewers are just football fans. All right? I don't cover baseball every day. That's why, you know, I promote my guy Blake Ruffino all the time. He does baseball every day. Matthew Musso's a friend of mine. He does baseball every single day. I don't do it every single day. You guys come here for LSU football. So, Matt, if you were to say, well, I just want my money to go to those three sports, well, football could come in and say, no, I just want football to go to us because we're making all the money. We're making so much more money than all the other schools. So then that gets you into the slippery slope of where we are now, as Sibley pointed out a minute ago, Title IX. You know, there was an expectation that 70% of revenue was going to, or of money was going to go to men's sports, 30% to the women. I mean, it changed from school to school. So there you go. And Matt, if I misread your quote, I'm sorry, but there are quite a few people that have sent me this, right? I had a message from a very successful business owner in South Louisiana. And he said, Carter, if I donate, how do I know it's going to football? And, you know, I explained the Bayou traditions stuff. So there you go. Let's go to Carvis. He says, Will Wade could coach and recruit. Yeah, Will Wade is a really good coach, and Matt McMahon is not. I think it's safe to say that now. Or Matt McMahon is not a good coach at LSU. All right. But maybe Will Wade has his sights set on bigger jobs than ours. But he's never coming back to LSU, at least for now. You never say never, though, right? You have seen controversial coaches return back to their initial roots in the SEC plenty of times before. Okay. What I would also say, though, the biggest thing, and I don't know why, I've always gotten good information on North Carolina. I don't have a gazillion North Carolina sources, but I've always said this, and this has been reiterated for quite some time. And I made this point years ago when Clemson and Florida State were being rumored to go to the SEC. That's not who ESPN wants in the SEC. They want North Carolina in the SEC. They do. Okay. And as days go by, I still think that's going to happen at some point. North Carolina in the Southeastern Conference. All right. But the biggest job opening in college basketball is about to be open. as a Hubert Davis is about to get fired at North Carolina. He made it to the finals. I grew up watching his analysis on ESPN. Watch him in the NBA some. And he's about to get canned. So the best job, North Carolina basketball, maybe in all of college sports, is about to open up. Okay. I'm about to tell you who's going to take that job. And it is an SEC coach. I believe the next head coach of the Tar Heels will be Nate Oates. All right. I believe so. Mark it down. Now, I'm not an insider per se, but I think that's going to happen. And that would be good for us because Oates would be out the SEC because the dude is probably, out of all the coaches in the SEC, definitely in the prime of his career. Definitely. Okay. But I do think the next coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels will be Nate Oates. Could I see them running it back with Hubert Davis? I could. Okay. Now, I will say, when watching LSU men's basketball last night, shout out to you, Tre'Davious Green. I saw you with that mini hook shot in the paint. And after that, I was like, I can't watch anymore. Of course, I'm going to definitely show a little bit more support to the football Tigers that also, you know, cross over and play basketball as well. Okay. Next thing. My goodness gracious. My buddy AYS Sports had that viral Twitter clip about something, playing Texas and Oklahoma in baseball. I have a neighbor who's a big college baseball fan, and he was saying Texas A&M's a team to beat. I want to say this about college baseball. I do think college football, I don't know how much more room for growth is there in college football. I just don't know how much bigger it can get. And I do think college basketball will always be a March Madness sport. But anyone that can actually pay attention to how a sport is structured could understand that college baseball has upside. It has real, real, real upside. I am very bullish on the future of college baseball. And this isn't just an LSU thing. Obviously, Jay Johnson is an absolute freaking monster. And speaking of monsters, you guys know Milam is my guy. Brazzy, I'm so excited to see all of them. Okay. But I do think college baseball can grow. Now, why is that? Well, college baseball has an insanely fun postseason structure. College baseball games also feel like in conference that they mean a lot. Like college series played at home venues feel like they're everything. And the postseason games are played in those same venues. Right? So being a regional, super regional, that stuff means a lot. I really do think college baseball has a chance to hit another level. It's already grown. Obviously, it's big in the SEC. But the one thing I really like about college baseball going into this next year is you do have huge stories of coaches who are assholes, all right? The bottom line is assholes move the needles in smaller sports. They just do, all right? I like the fact that nobody can stand Tony Vitello. I like that. I really, really, really do. I'm a Tennessee football YouTuber on Power SEC. All right. Rocky Top. I owe a lot to them. I could care less about their baseball program. Tony V, though, is a needle mover. He just is. You guys know it. All right. He's just one of those guys. Like, if you were to pick one SEC coach in any sport that you would want to sock in the face, a lot of people would say Tony V. All right. You got this Schlossnagel story, going from Texas A&M to Texas after playing in a championship game. A championship game. College baseball has upside. College baseball has upside. I'm telling you, there's true animosity. You have a lot of teams with really good coaches that are trying to hit that next level. All right? They're trying to get to that natty. So I'm really excited about that. The baseball coaching in this conference is so damn good. There are so many really good coaches. So I'm excited. Will I watch more than I normally do? Probably not, because, you know, I'm just NFL draft out on the NFL channel. But I'm really, really excited about LSU baseball this season. But I'm more excited about just college baseball in general, okay? Oh, yeah, that's young. I would much rather Jay Johnson, who's just crazy. Like, he is so dead set on winning in as many natties as we possibly can. And the fact that we turn the season around as quickly as we did tells you something. But obviously the big story, of course, is Matt McMahon. We'll keep it going. Derek O'Neill says, if LSU fires McMahon after the season, go back and get Will Wade. The guy can really coach basketball. Yeah, and the crime Will Wade committed is not really frowned upon now. It's just it. Okay. Blanche says LSU is a women's basketball school. Yes. Yes. And history kind of backs it up as well. But it is weird. LSU men's basketball has history too. It's more individual history than it is actual team success. Even though Strobile Swift and John Brady and those guys got honored. Super excited about that. Jabari Smith, are you kidding me? The only qualm I have with Jabari Smith is, why did his son not come to play for LSU? Jabari, you sent your son to Auburn. Auburn! Okay, I love me some Jabari Smith. Okay. Now, I do also want to address a joke I made. All right. Someone got mad over the joke I made regarding the Luka Doncic and Anthony Davis trade. Okay. And it was just a stupid throwaway line. It wasn't anything. I know he's in the portal already, but I said maybe LSU should trade Landon Ibieta for Jeremiah Smith. Here's a stupid tweet. You guys know I like Landon Ibieta a lot. He was hurt, and that was the reason. The point was, though, how stupid that move was by the Dallas Mavericks. As many of you know, I'm a big NBA fan. That is the most shocking trade I've ever seen. Ever. But what was crazy is there are people that live in the state of Louisiana that weren't necessarily mad about the Landon Ibieta thing. They were mad about the Anthony Davis thing. They said, hey, how can you compare Ibieta to Anthony Davis? That's not what the Ibieta part of it. I don't think Landon cares. He might have laughed at it. I don't know. But y'all, when a human being shits on you, you don't wipe the shit off and just forget. All right? That's just not how it works. It's not how it works. Anthony Davis, to an organization that drafted him, gave him a life-changing amount of money, could not bid his farewell to New Orleans. Still never has. And I'm supposed to care? Really? Now, of course, I care about him as a human being, as does everyone. I don't wish anything nefarious against him. But it's kind of like when people were patting Elias Ricks on the back when he went from LSU to Alabama. If you transfer to Oregon, no big deal. Best of luck to you. Anthony Davis went to the Lakers. Anthony Davis didn't bid farewell. He wore a That's All Folks shirt. Come on now. Let's go to Brian. He wants to talk about Alex Atkins. Potentially could be the best hire of any FBS program this offseason. I see a lot of you saying bring Will Wade back. Okay. I don't know. Am I excited about it? Yes. Do I want to go as far as saying this was the best hire in all of FBS? That's a lot. Do I think it'll help, though? Yes. Because our offensive line wasn't really that good. And the fact that you bring in a guy that many people consider to be an offensive line guru to go alongside our offensive line coach and Brad Davis, I think goes a long way. So I'm really excited about that. All right. But I think the big thing with Alex Atkins, and I won't go too deep into it because we did a show on him almost exclusively earlier in the week. Do we become a counter run team? Is that why Brian Kelly hired him? To bring in a guy that has a clear rushing attack. Now he has the title of run game coordinator. Or he could co-run game coordinator. Or is Brad Davis a run game coordinator? I don't know. All I care about, though, is we need to have a rushing plan. And we were so gung-ho about running the football this past season where our whole team was just Garrett Nussmeier, go win us a game. That's what a good chunk of it was. But the no rushing plan. And obviously college football is more complicated than high school football. But at any level of football, there needs to be a staple play that you have in the run game that you can count on and that you could play action out of and do different things out of. And we just didn't have that. All right? We just didn't have it. So I understand wanting LSU's run game to be better. I think every single person wants that. But how do we make it better? If LSU were to ask me, what is the one thing you would recommend as an outsider looking in? It would be find that scheme, that thing that you're known for. All right. Now, I understand people do not want the Les Miles days back of straight power. I totally understand that. I don't want that either. But that was our play. That was it. When push came to shove, that was our play. And that play won us some football games. All right. Was it an effective play? No, but that was our identity. And that buzzword is used quite a bit. We need it. All right. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Friendly reminder. The big game is this week. And I will be in New Orleans this next week. On Radio Row midweek, and I'm really excited about that. So I don't know what our live stream schedule is going to look like. I'm going to be doing a few things with my Believe Saints show as the Saints are looking for their new head coach. I'll be releasing a new episode regarding that tomorrow, and we will see how this actually plans out for the Saints. It's looking more and more by the day that Kellen Moore is going to be the guy. But I can also see Kellen Moore saying, I don't want to go to the Saints with Derek Carr in a messy situation. So, look, It is what it is at this point as far as the Saints head coaching job is concerned. But I will be in New Orleans doing stuff for that, Power Hour NFL and Power Hour LSU. Okay? Let's go to Pegasus. How does the run game coordinator and pass game coordinator, how does that work? Do they suggest what to do with Sloan or what? All right. I'll give you some insight on that. Pegasus, it varies from school to school. It really does. And this is one of the hardest things to recognize when it comes to judging this position coach or this coach or whatever. Are you running your scheme or are you calling plays for the head coach's scheme? Does your OC just run everything and the assistant coaches just coach your position groups? It honestly does vary from team to team. A lot of times player rotation is decided by the position coach, but the actual scheme is all decided by the OC with some input from the head coach. Now, as far as a run game coordinator, what run plays are being run and all of that, the success of those things oftentimes comes down to who your coordinator is on offense or defense. Because now, on offense and defense, there are run and pass game coordinators. You'll see quite a few assistant DB coaches be passing game coordinators. Part of that is to have a sexier title, because a sexier title gives, you know, more of a reason for me to give you a raise, or it makes you sound better on your resume. That's part of it as well. Okay. So hopefully that answered it. Obviously it's a very weird way of doing it. But I do think as far as LSU is concerned, we don't have a Chip Kelly or we don't have a Lane Kiffin calling the shots where there is, you know, an identity with our offense. Our offense struggled with its identity last year. So I think that's something that would be exciting for Alex Atkins. I also think Joe Sloan, being a younger, overall affable, open-minded guy, I think he's open to whatever input from assistants. Okay? Let's go to BT. Thank you for the super chat. How confident are you in this O-line versus a Clemson D-line, which features two first rounders? How much will Atkins help? Yeah, I mean, the first thing is who are your offensive tackles going to be? That's going to be the first question that you have to ask regarding LSU's offensive line next season. Okay. You know, Braylon Moore is more likely going to be your center. So does that give DJ Chester an opportunity to move to one of the guard spots? I don't know. Is he an offensive tackle? I don't know. What about the development of Weston Davis? So as exciting as it will be to have Alex Atkins there as a guy that was, you know, an offensive line coach at Florida State, it's still going to come down to your dudes and the actual play caller. One guy to keep an eye out for, obviously Tyree Adams, has a very good shot of being one of these starting tackles. One name to keep an eye out for is Cohen Echols. All right. I think Cohen Echols is a very interesting name. Extremely athletic coming out of Katy. You know, some center experience, obviously, this past season. So is he a guy to be factored into this mix? And then the one guy that just keeps getting mentioned, and I try to be as transparent as I possibly can because, you know, I've been able to talk to this young man a few times, is Carius Kern. Of the true freshman, that's the one that's getting mentioned the most. All right. So what we could say as far as like our offensive line is concerned, there are three players I would put near 100% certainty that will be starting week one. That's Tyree Adams. Cohen Echols. Josh Thompson, the transfer from Northwestern. and Braylon Moore. Those are the three guys that I would expect. Okay. So there you go. Now, I'll answer a few more. Really, really freaking excited about the offseason. I am. Okay. Just because the offseason really pushes me to put out as much compelling videos as I possibly can. And we will continue doing film studies on the transfers that are coming in. Okay. Let's see. This comes in from Mark. Carter, I want you to keep talking about the Luka Doncic trade because that's all anyone is talking about right now. And it's true. I don't think there's an LSU equivalent, though, of that. I really, really, really don't. I think because there's no trades in college sports. I do think, though, it would be something like trading Jaden Daniels for Geno Smith in a first-round pick. And it's just something you would never do. All right, so I think that's... Hey, it's pretty fair. I saw a few other like people trying to do like a football equivalent of it. That's actually the best one I could come up with. Let's see. Jared, thank you for the super chat. Let's go to Pegasus. What about De'Aaron Fox joining Victor Wembanyama? And doesn't hit like the Luka trade does. You want my honest conspiracy, you know, as far as like the Luka trade, because it is suspicious that the Lakers, who always get the trades, and every single Laker trade has resulted in a massive ratings boost for the NBA because the Lakers are the biggest brand, and it just makes it more interesting, right? You know, the Lakers trade a Pau Gasol for Kwame Brown led to some legendary Laker-Celtic series in the Kobe stages. Obviously, Kobe Shaq. Obviously, I mean, there's a gazillion examples of that. And the fact that Mikal Bridges, it took 5 first-rounders to get that done. And with Luka Doncic, it takes 1. And Anthony Davis. It's just crazy. It's crazy. But I got some wild, wild, wild conspiracies regarding the Luka Doncic situation. One is, it didn't fall, and this was very swept under the rug, but there was a story regarding one of LeBron James's business advisors raising capital to start an international basketball league. And I have long said that there is room for a competitor to basketball. And even though I'm a football channel, NFL channel, LSU channel, SEC channel, it is my livelihood. I still think the NBA could touch the NFL's ratings if they were to change a few things. Now, it would take a while, a very long while. But I believe it. And that's why I think there's room for another league to come in. And what changes with Luka joining LeBron? Well, there's a lot, but I won't go too deep into that rabbit hole. That's my deepest conspiracy. It is suspicious, so there's a lot of weird things, okay? Because, you know, according to everyone, the Mavericks called the Lakers, and the Mavericks decided this were to happen. And there's a lot of conspiracies on the Mavericks side of things. But that's a different story for a different day. Okay? I know Chance loves the conspiracy theories. I know it. I love it. Sibley says, I think LSU is one of the few teams that returned their quarterback. That is unfortunately not true. There's actually quite a few teams that LSU plays next season that returns their QB. Arkansas returns their QB. Florida returns their QB. South Carolina returns their quarterback. Clemson returns our quarterback. And I'm just going over teams that are on our schedule. All right. So you also look at Tennessee. Tennessee returns our quarterback. It's going to be a tough year. Oh, Sam, you can't call soccer a soft international sport. It is anything but that. Anybody that, you know, says, hey, the NBA needs this, but soccer needs this. I guarantee it. If you ever actually spent the time it took to understand how soccer runs their leagues, you would think how we run American sports leagues is the dumbest thing in the world. But I won't get into it. Pegasus, back me up on that. Okay. So out of Charles, Universal Truth, wants Will Wade back. Pavia, yes, he is back next season. Starting defensive linemen and linebackers for next season. I actually think that's pretty straightforward. Your DTs will be McKinley and obviously Ahmad Bro to kick things off. But Jacobian Guillory, how healthy is he? You also bring in Sadir Mitchell with a lot of experience. And then, of course, you have the true freshman that you're bringing back. You got four of them coming in. One of them is going to be a part of the rotation at the very least. And then a defensive end, obviously, it's going to be a combination of Peyton, Pyburn, obviously the transfer from Nebraska, who is a really, really good pass rusher from the interior, and LSU needs to use that. And then you also have some guys returning at defensive end that are interesting, like Gabriel Relaford. And then your linebackers are a little more straightforward. I've heard mostly good news as far as Whit Weeks' recovery is concerned, even though that injury was gruesome. But then you're going to have Wes Weeks, Harold Perkins, Devon Keys, and so on. Sam, okay. Say, I guarantee it, Sam. You would think the exact opposite. You would think the NFL is soft without soccer runs their leagues. Let's see. I'm getting a lot of Facebook messages regarding Will Wade coming back. Sure. I'm fine with that. How does LSU's defense match up with Clemson's offense? Bad. There's just no other way around it. You know, because last year our live streams became so defensive tackle focused because of the Dominic Williams storyline. But, you know, it's going to be the same thing, but with the LSU secondary. Now, we do have Monsieur Delane, who's going to be good for us next year. And then, of course, you have some other pieces that are fun and interesting. All right. Obviously, Tamarcus Cooley is generating a lot of buzz. And then, of course, DJ Pickett. But Clemson has really good young receivers that were freshmen last year. And Cade Klubnik is good. He's good. He's got a somewhat outside shot of being a top 10 draft pick in the next draft cycle. So he's interesting, to say the least. All right. He was the number one ranked quarterback coming out. And going into next year, he will have quite a bit of starters experience with Clemson. He's good. He's good. Is he an elite thrower? No. Is he an elite runner? No, but he's very, very good at both. Let's go to Jared Super Chat. Jared watches quite a bit of LSU basketball. I think Hal's in here as well. He's actually a season ticket holder, goes to every game. Yeah, I just don't see a world where Will Wade is ever at LSU again. Ever. Okay. Like, we can get into the ethics of how everything went down. But the wiretap and the wife being on the checks or whatever it was, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Oh, wow. This is interesting. So I want everyone in the chat, like, this just came out. All right. So Chip Kelly, we know he went to the Raiders. All right. He's going to the Raiders to be the offensive coordinator. Now, I want you to guess what Chip Kelly will make per season as the offensive coordinator of the Raiders. Klubnik, yeah, I could see that. It's pretty similar. Graham says $3 million a year. Now, remember, the NFL, there are no salary caps on the amount you could pay a coach. Okay. All right. Oh, Brian Kelly was wearing some Roback stuff. I see you. BK rocking with the Roband. Dude, someone got me this Roback shirt. I've still not bought a single Roback shirt because I'm not like that yet. I would need 12 more super chats to get just one. But these shirts are comfortable. I swear, man. Charles is right. $6 million a year. $6 million a year to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL. $6 million to just call plays. and not have to recruit or do anything. Now you don't have a quarterback. $6 million a year. I would have never have guessed that. Never. But the price of the coordinator has gone up last year. You guys know I love Blake Baker. $2.3 million. It's a lot of money. $6 million. Jim Knowles getting $3.1 million. $6 million. $6 million. Did Chip Kelly's offense ever actually work in the NFL? Corey says, how about Jack Besh? Really excited about Jack Besh. I actually have Jack Besh's autographed helmet over here. And obviously, I'm very pro Jack Besh, him being a former guest. And by the way, even though he did transfer, well, he transferred because Kayshon came back for a second, and Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers were there. You probably would have transferred too. Yeah, I'm really excited about Jack Besh. Love his family. Love Jack and everything he's been through. Obviously, it's a great, great, great story. But I do want to talk about a player who actually finished his career at LSU, who had a very good day at the Senior Bowl and was voted MVP of his position. That was Miles Frazier. Now, did Emory Jones and Garrett Dellinger have tough Senior Bowls? Yeah. Well, in particular, Emory Jones did. Now, we'll say in the actual game, Garrett Dellinger did some good things. And obviously, Emory Jones playing tackle. I'm shocked he still hadn't really repped that guard. But I wasn't there at all the Senior Bowl practices. And this is a very good year defensive lineman in the NFL draft. Okay. But shout out to you. Another guy that also generated some buzz from the actual game itself was Savion Jones. He had a very big pass rush as a three tech in a race car package. So there you go. But shout out to Jack Besh. But more importantly, shout out to Miles Frazier. Now, the last Senior Bowl player we'll talk about is one that is not really a shock to me having success. And that, of course, was Mason Taylor. No real shock there. Yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory that he was going to move up draft boards. Now, here's a problem with Mason Taylor. It is a good tight end draft. And the NFL is a copycat league. So I do think tight ends will move up draft boards. So you take a look at Mason Taylor. Where can he go? Obviously, I wouldn't be biased. And think he could be a day two pick. Don't think he's going to go day one. Tyler Warren is like the clear-cut tight end one out of Penn State. Then, yeah, the receiving tight end in Harold Fannin. But the tight end position's actually pretty deep. The Arroyo kid out of Miami is very interesting. Colston Loveland is who many have as a tight end three out of Michigan. You have Gunnar Helm. Shout out to the Texas Longhorns, John Sibley Butler. And then, yeah, Mason Taylor. He's kind of in that mix with all those other tight ends. As you can see, I've gotten deeper into the NFL draft with Power Hour NFL. Objectively speaking, do I think Mason Taylor is better than those guys? I think it's about where those guys are. The most interesting tight end is one out of Syracuse, Aronde Gadsden, who's just a freak. But Mason will get drafted probably in the second or third round. Fourth round, I feel, at the absolute lowest. NFL teams love genetics, so there you go. And they also love those three letters, LSU. So we'll see what happens with Ole Mason Taylor. Billy, what's good? Everybody's been calling Jack Besh Puka Nacua. It's crazy. All right. Well, that'll just about do it for me. Big thanks to all our super Sibley, Brian, Matt, and J-Red. What's going on in the world? All right. Once again, Tuesday night. Let's see. I'm trying to think for Tuesday night, we'll do some kind of live stream, but I will be in New Orleans. I'm traveling to New Orleans on Tuesday for the Super Bowl. And who knows? We might be able to do a show on Wednesday from the Super Bowl. So we'll see you there. If you want to connect with me in New Orleans, hit me up. LSU. Boom! And tonight, we are doing, oh, we're doing meatballs with paneer. Let's go.